Welcome to Tip TV Finance on Friday, the 9th of December 2016. We're hopefully getting near to that. The rest of the year will pass more quickly and we'll get over the misery that we've had for on many aspects. But joined today to cheer us up, John Mills, CEO at JML. How are you today, John?
Fine. Nice to be back.
Right. Maybe the political side, just have a quick mention of that. We had that vote, this rather strange vote in Article 50.
Yeah.
With most MPs remainers, but voting for Article 50 to be invoked on the end of March. Is that them putting their jobs before their beliefs?
Well, I think there is some problem about all this, which is that most of the MPs across the political spectrum were in favour of Remain, but there they all are voting for Leave. And I think part of it is because they believe that the democratic decision taken on the 23rd of June has to be respected. But I think also there are some electoral calculations inevitably involved because Labour, for example, of all the seats held by Labour, 70% had Leave majorities. And if you exclude London and one or two other places, it's about 90%. And, you know, that's a big amount of electoral pressure.
So it was them putting their beliefs to one side.
I think that the problem was that their beliefs conflicted with what the democratic aspects of it all were all about and their own electoral chances. So, I mean, you could see how they were caught in a dilemma.
Yes. Well, obviously, some would say, like Zach Goldsmith, you put your principles before your job prospects or your career, let's say.
Yeah, you can, but politics is the art of the possible.
Yeah.
I think
right.
you're asking an awful lot of people to...
Especially politicians.
Well, politics is all about compromise. It's not about absolute positions. And, you know, I think you've got to recognise that people are under big pressures and that they have to reach accommodations and come to some sort of practical conclusions. And I think that's what happened.
Well, I think that's a very best. You've spoken like a politician, that answer. Excellent stuff. Right, let's go on to the slides of the day. Most popular in business and finance, oil futures curve raised doubts over OPEC rally, but beyond the headline price reaction, the market has thrown OPEC a curveball. Oil futures contracts for delivery late next year and further into the future are not reacting quite as enthusiastically. That's from the FT. And then the Brexit boost, I was going to see where this came from. Actually, the Express, I suppose they were... They're not. They're more on the Brexit side. Those people. But house prices strongest. House prices strongest since April as low supply pushes up values, and that's the issue with the housing market. I mean, it is a supply demand thing. It's not rocket science, is it?
I think it's largely supply and demand. And what's happened is that the amount of supply has plummeted over the last 30 or 40 years, and what's really gone down is public sector building. That's gone down by about 90%. Private sector building has gone down by about 50%, but the combination of the two has just produced this lethal imbalance between supply and demand, and inevitably, especially in the southeast, prices have skyrocketed.
Isn't that what the late Mrs. Thatcher was trying to do with the, you know, giving people the right to buy, so that would get rid of a massive amount of housing market pushes up prices there, and then the whole you have the property owning democracy, and then obviously ultra low interest rates since Mark Carney came in. So it was almost impossible for house prices not to go up, even if there wasn't a shortage of living accommodation.
Well, I think that certainly the availability of vast amounts of finance going into housing helped push the prices up. But in the last analysis, I think it is supply and demand that have been more responsible for this than anything else. And I think the trouble about the right to buy scheme wasn't so much that I think it's quite reasonable for people to be allowed to buy the house in which they live. The problem was the huge discounts on the one hand, and the fact that councils were not allowed to spend the money they did get in on building new accommodation. And the result of all this was this huge plunge down in public sector house building, which has meant that social housing, or housing not charged in the market, is just in desperately short supply now.
I think that was it was a Thatcherite, that was unforgivable in terms of the damage it caused and what we're seeing now as well. So it's hurt everyone from, you know, almost from top to bottom, unless you were like a massive property tycoon. But let's go on to the next slide here, which is from Nicole Elliott, the trader at the Investors Chronicle. ECB gives and takes, less money and more time was generally expected. The ECB decided to extend its QE program, buying sovereign debt and almost anything else that moves, I think, for another 12 months at a pace of just 60 billion euros per month rather than the current 80. That was just what we expected, really, wasn't it?
I think that the ECB's policy on quantitative easing followed what's happened in America, followed what happened here, was probably inevitable in all the circumstances, but I think it's building up potentially a huge problem which is going to have to be resolved at some stage, which is that vast amounts of this money value depends on the euro not breaking up. But I mean, if the euro does fracture, then there's going to be a colossal imbalance between the assets and liabilities of particularly the European Central Bank and the Bundesbank. And where that's going to lead, I think, is very hard to determine.
I mean, I think the only issue with that is just that the problem is that when you say something like that, you could have said that, say, in 2008 and 2009. Most people did it, but probably I did as well. But was here in 2016, and the wheels haven't come off the wagon yet. Somehow they managed to keep everything going. I mean, is it going to be like a Japan thing where, like, you know, 25 years later we're saying, yes, it's still going to break up any day now. You're like Peter, you know, like the boy who cried wolf.
Well, I think there's something in that, but I think the real dilemma faced by the European Union is that they can carry on the way they are at the moment, in which case they're going to get almost no growth in the foreseeable future. Goodness knows what that's going to do to the political situation. Or the euro breaks up, in which case there's going to be a big depression before a recovery gets into its stride. So really there's a very, very awkward choice that policymakers in Europe now have got to make.
I mean, you said there would be a great depression if everything fractured, but actually, with their own currencies and everything back to normal, let's say, it actually might be that there's only like a 6 month state of instability, and then everything just goes straight back and goes back up again. I mean, we're out of this the chains of the EU.
Well, I mean, there are some interesting historical examples of what's happened where what you say did materialize. If you take what happened in Argentina in 2002, the link between the dollar and the peso was broken, and the peso went down by an incredible amount. I think it's about 70%. And what happened then is the economy did tank, but actually for quite a short period of time, for a year or so. And then, having had a decade of stagnation, the economy started growing at 8 or 9 or 10% per annum. A similar sort of thing happened in Iceland.
Yes, exactly, yes. And all here with the ERM, and that was a mini version of that as well. So, so in fact, I mean, maybe we should just let this happen, let the breakup happen, and at least entertain the idea of the euro splitting into the different currencies again, different central.
Well, I think that is possible, but I do think that whatever depression there's going to be is made worse by this enormous amount of debt that's been created. And also, it is more difficult to break something up if this actual unit, the euro, is the same everywhere than if you still got the peso and still got the krona or whatever it was in Iceland.
Back to the peseta and the lira and all those wonderful. Right, the new drachma. Right, let's move along. Trading the ECB was messy, shows a tweet from Chris Whittle, market reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 10-year bund yield reacts to ECB tapering, sell, no wait, more purchases, buy. Yes, it was. Well, basically, the message at the moment is just the market to buy almost whatever happens, which Renzi resigns, Renzi doesn't resign, you just buy. We're in that mood. We're in the Trump bump, and we don't care.
Yes. I mean, I think it was interesting that the market didn't go down when Renzi didn't win his referendum, because, I mean, the margin was very substantial, 60 to 40. I think it was partly because Renzi losing was priced in, and so people were expecting it. But I think the markets are a bit sort of bomb happy at the moment.
Completely. It's difficult. I think I was reading today. Somebody wrote, doesn't matter. Trump's elected. There's a fight with China. There could be aliens landing on Earth. Doesn't matter. Let's just buy the indices. I mean, it's literally that gung ho, and presumably it'll continue like that until we give up and we say, actually, it's a buy. Well, let's buy it. This is a new paradigm, and then that's the time when everything falls.
Well, again, I think you're back to quantitative easing to some extent. I mean, there's just so much money swilling around. I mean, the increase in the money supply that's taken place over the last 10 or 15 years is staggeringly large. In the UK, it's about 1,000%. In the US, it's less, but it's still a huge, huge multiple. And one of the really interesting things about this is that, those of us who were brought up to think that monetarism was the answer to all the world's problems, said that this sort of increase in the money supply is bound to produce enormous amounts of inflation. It just hasn't materialised at all.
Because we have low interest rates, presumably.
Well, I think the low interest rates...
We haven't had that mixture before. And presumably lower interest rates or zero interest rates are very deflationary. So that balances out the increase in money
supply. Yes, I mean, that's true,
supply.
But the question is which came first? I think on the whole it was the low rates of inflation that generated low interest rates, probably rather than the other way around. Although actually if you look back in history, I mean, it's really interesting to see how stable on the whole money's been, apart from during wartime periods or special events like the hyperinflation in Germany, and the 1970s and 80s, inflation has always been really pretty low. So I'm not sure that we're living now in exceptionally different times from the past. I think on the whole, the experiences of the 70s and 80s were probably the exception.
Okay, well, let's move along because we're nearly out of time. University of Michigan Confidence in the US and the Baker Hughes rig count on the economic calendar. And then let's hopefully get the next slide. Oanda clients very long of gold and silver, quite long of the pound, even though it's backed off over the last 24 hours, and going more bearish on dollar yen, which at this stage looks as though it could be a mistake. But we'll see how that pans out next week. Moving along to our Tip TV trade of the day, buy around $1,168, objective 1190, stops below 1156. That really has been a pie in the face for most people. They were looking for Trump to give gold the boost.
Yeah.
It's pulled the rug from under gold and probably caused a lot of people to be materially poorer. Do you think it's ever going to kick? It's going to rebound when, you know, maybe once Trump comes in, maybe next year or something?
You know, I think predicting what's going to happen in the future is always difficult. Trying to predict what's going to happen to gold prices in the future is absolutely impossible. It is so easy to be wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll leave it there then. Broker recommendations for UK stocks. Just picked out three of interest at the moment. Antofagasta, clearly the FTSE's in a preferred copper play, which has got the Trump bump and his infrastructure promises. I think the share price is probably, from memory, about £2 higher than the target there, Barclays Capital. That's how fast it's been rising. And then we shed tears for brokers all around London. We love stock brokers and brokers as much as we love estate agents and people from the HMRC. So they've had a tough week at the hands of the FCA, who we presumably love almost as much as estate agents and other people like that. So overweight at Barclays Capital, £9.50 target. I'm not quite sure what the IG share price is now, but I think it's probably quite a long way south of that. And then also going into the gambling area, the regulator pointing the finger at these machines that you have in the side of cafes and other places like that, the gaming machines. William Hill also under the cosh there, and a logical sell there at Berenberg. Final thoughts for the day, John?
Well, we live in very uncertain times. You wonder what's going to happen looking ahead with all these elections coming up in Europe. What's this 2017 going to look like? Is the European Union still going to be there in the same shape as it is now in a year's time? Probably.
It's almost as revolutionary as 1917, perhaps. But on that note, John Mills, CEO at GML, thank you very much for opening the Tip TV Finance Show for us today.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.